Today on the Monocle Arts Review, we'll be discussing where the real drama lies on our television screens. Is it in the scandalous new show, The Girlfriend Experience? Perhaps it's in the cult thriller, The Path. Or maybe you needn't look any further than the US presidential race. Does Donald Trump a good screenplay? God help us. To mull it over with us, I'll be joined down the line from Toronto by John Doyle, television critic for The Globe and Mail. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. Stay tuned. Christine Reed is a Chicago-based law student who takes up an internship at a prestigious firm. While trying to establish herself in the legal world, she suddenly is distracted when a classmate introduces her to the world of transactional relationships. Known as GFEs, they are women who provide the girlfriend experience, hence the name of the brand new television show about to hit North American screens in April. John Doyle, welcome to the show. What exactly is The Girlfriend Experience?
I've seen a handful of episodes. It is, to me, it's kind of brilliant, actually. It is derived from the Steven Soderbergh movie of the same title from a few years ago, which starred a pornography star, Sasha Gray, who has since had something of a legitimate dramatic career. But it was about a few days in the life of a young woman who was essentially a high-class prostitute. The movie, however, was set in the immediate period of the crash of 2008, when the high-class prostitute was dealing with clients who were losing a lot of money when Wall Street was collapsing. So that was part of the context. The television series is not rooted in that kind of environment. It's much more focused on the Christine Reed character and her life. She is, as you said in the introduction, she's a law student. She's an intern at a prestigious Chicago law firm, and she is stretched for money, as anybody is in those circumstances, and she's introduced to this thing by a friend who has already, it seems, established a very cozy life for herself, doing these girlfriend experiences for much money several times a month, so she's drawn into that. What makes it kind of brilliant, from what I've seen, is the coldness of it. It is it's a very sinister series. Or not so much erotic, although there is a good deal of sex and suggestions of sex in the first few episodes, but there's a deeply sinister quality to the life that this rather narcissistic, coldly amoral young woman chooses. And it is propelled along by this sense of doom, by this sense that something terrible is going to happen to this woman, young woman, even though she declines to recognize it.
Well, before we venture any further, let's hear a quick clip of The Girlfriend Experience.
I mean, it's not something that I want to make into a career. I only do it a few times a month. I get off on it. I like the rush.
He calls me Ashley. Should I be Chelsea? You can be whoever you want to be.
She's totally unstable.
He's trying to discredit everything that I have.
Did you accept money in exchange for sex?
I'm not answering that question.
I cannot understand why you would do something so stupid.
Because I like it.
Everyone will find out what you really do for a living.
You're scaring me.
I know what I'm doing.
You just want the money.
I want everything about it.
Yeah, because you're a fucking whore.
What did you say?
John, there's really no limit to the number of television shows that have been adapted from movies. I'm thinking Fargo is one that has done particularly well. My Big Fat Greek Wedding is one that didn't really go to plan at all. How does this one match up, considering that it is actually adapted from a movie that was quite critically acclaimed?
Well, it stacks up very well, I think. The first thing to note is that these are half-hour episodes, a little bit, perhaps more than 30 minutes, so it's not a one-hour drama. It moves along quite swiftly. Steven Soderbergh is very much involved with this adaptation, and it has a lot of Soderbergh in it. That is, it has that coolly analytical approach. There's a coldness to it. It was made here in Toronto, actually, and it makes brilliant use of Toronto's equivalent of Wall Street, which is Bay Street, which is, you know, a street of these enormous corporate towers where business and finance and law are done. And it uses the architecture, the spaces of the corporate world to great effect. I was, in fact, a little taken aback watching it to see these spaces that I'm somewhat familiar with in Toronto, the corporate law offices, these vast and coldly antiseptic restaurants, high-priced restaurants where those people do business, to see them used to such an effect. I also think, you know, one way to read this series is that it's a kind of indictment of millennials. It's an indictment of people in their 20s who do believe that older people exist only to be exploited, not to be learned from, but to be coldly exploited, which is what the main character and her friend are doing with these middle-aged men. They're exploiting them ruthlessly.
Well, The Girlfriend Experience premieres on the Stars Network on April 10th. Now, we've discussed the impending rise of the streaming service Hulu on the show quite recently with you, John, when they premiered their show 11/22/63 last month. Now they have a brand new drama that's premiering this week, The Path. John, fill us in on the storyline here.
Well, The Path is a 10-part, one-hour drama series that is set inside what some people would call a religious, sort of new age pseudo-religious community, and other people might call a cult. It is called the Mayorist Movement, based on the thinking and teachings of a man named Mayer, who believes that he has found enlightenment by discovering that there are steps along a ladder to spiritual enlightenment, and that when you have followed all of the rungs on the ladder, you reach a place called the garden, in which there is bliss. Now, it is an odd sort of religion or cult, depending on which way you view it, because on the one hand, there are touches of Scientology about it, and on the other hand, some of it is just sort of new age thinking mishmash of things. The plot line is that inside this group there is tension, because one of the long-standing and prominent members, Eddie, who is played by Aaron Paul, whom everybody will remember as Jesse in Breaking Bad, has, while he has been in South America on a sort of retreat for the group, he has begun to have doubts. He has begun to sense that there is something terribly phony about the whole movement, that there might be something very ugly going on under the surface of it. His wife, who's played by Michelle Monaghan from the first season of True Detective, thinks that he's actually having an affair. She doesn't realize he's having doubts. Meanwhile, the person who is the sort of de facto leader of the group, his character's name is Cal, he's played by Hugh Dancy, is clearly using Eddie's, the Aaron Paul character's, doubts to become the leader, to sort of tighten his grip on it. So you have this, what you really have is a drama about faith, about doubt, about cults. And certainly in the first few episodes, there was a highly erotic charge to the storyline.
Well, before we go any further, let's have a quick listen to The Path.
Looking into the Mayorist Movement.
I'm putting them on cult watch.
How about you tell me something so I know that this isn't a trap?
We don't hurt people.
You sure about that?
We who follow this path, we struggle with our relationship with the outside world. If darkness falls,
we are light.
I mean, am I gonna blow up my life because of something I don't even know, but I really saw?
You're nothing! You're nobody!
We're telling you to move to the side.
I can walk out on the street and make people believe.
John, I guess the idea of original content from, say, Amazon or Netflix is really nothing new now at all. I would say that Netflix really has got into a bit of a gear with the kind of content we expect from them. They certainly have this sort of feeling when you sit down to watch House of Cards or any of their other original series, you kind of know what to expect from them. Amazon seems to be a bit of a mass market mess. What do you think the feeling is from Hulu? Are they starting to kind of come of age, I suppose, with their original offerings?
I think they are starting to, but I think the impetus behind Netflix and other streaming services going into original content of the kind that The Path is, the impetus is to sort of reach HBO-level quality in drama, to create something that is must-see, that everybody wants to see because it's what the critics are talking about and everybody's talking about. And it also is something that you put in a library that people will want to see for years to come. And HBO quality is really the aim for all of this. With something like The Path, I think what you're seeing is an attempt to do that, but it's not that good. The Path lacks, while it's good, it's engaging, it's a psychological thriller, it is not nuanced enough. It drags a bit. Some characters are underwritten. It hasn't reached the level that you could say this could be on HBO and it would be acclaimed as a triumph for HBO. It's not that good. It is good, though.
Well, The Path premieres today on Hulu. While all these new shows are hitting screens this month, some might argue that the best drama on television at the moment is from the US election coverage. It seems that not a week goes by where Donald Trump, candidate for the Republican nomination, doesn't make headlines for something he said that sparks outrage somewhere. John, the first Republican presidential debate was viewed by more people than any other in history, with about 24 million viewers. Now, I know everyone's going to have an opinion on this, but what's your take on what makes it such must-see viewing?
Well, first of all, you are quite right, Ben. It is the best drama unfolding on television in North America at the moment. The debates are as big as the biggest drama on television, which would be The Walking Dead. And there are times when it seems like the Republican Party is going to turn into The Walking Dead. From the point of view of some, if Donald Trump becomes the nominee and divides the party. The appeal is the rawness of it, the vitriol, the bluntness of the talk. Donald Trump is a compelling character and chillingly compelling to many people. If you sit down and watch an entire rally that he holds with several thousand people in the audience, and you listen to what he's saying, you listen to the bluntness of his biases, his bigotry, and you listen to that being cheered, it is incredibly compelling, and to some people disheartening to see that. It is drawing incredible amount of viewers, I think, not just because it's a presidential year, but because you are seeing the unspoken being spoken in a context in which people don't expect it to be spoken.
John, I have been looking and listening to a lot of the cable news shows over in the US throughout this whole campaign, and a lot of people have started saying that the debates, well, there've just been too many of them. They are not must-see viewing anymore, and you've even got a lot of the candidates who don't even bother turning up to a lot of these debates. A couple of them have had to be cancelled because really the only one ready to stand up on stage and tell everyone what they think is someone like John Kasich. What are your thoughts on how the debates have changed over time? Because it does feel as though we've got past the point where they are addictive viewing and you never know what's going to happen. And they've sort of started falling into repetitive territory. You know that Donald Trump is going to say something completely ridiculous. People are going to have trouble taking him to task on the details of what he said. Ted Cruz will try and play up on that sort of branding as well. They sort of seem to follow the same formula, don't they?
Well, the debates have diminished in importance recently simply for the fact that there are fewer candidates. Candidates keep dropping out as they don't accumulate the number of delegates to the convention that they need to keep going. So while the debates have diminished in stature or in terms of compelling viewing, the coverage is still extraordinary. Even watching 10 or 15 minutes of pundits arguing on CNN about Donald Trump, about Ted Cruz, can turn into the most outlandish debate. Just last week, we had if you tuned into CNN when pundits and spokespersons for the different candidates were being interviewed, extraordinary accusations were being made against the Trump campaign, claiming it planted the story in the National Enquirer. You had Trump and Ted Cruz arguing about their wives. I mean, it was extraordinary stuff to witness. And I think that is going to continue. While there might not be any formal debates, coverage of the election campaign with a character as compelling and as to many people repulsive as Donald Trump, as long as he is in the spotlight, the television coverage will be amazing to watch. It is high drama or dark comedy, depending on your point of view.
Thank you very much to my guest today over in Toronto, John Doyle, where the Prime Minister is Justin Trudeau, and I'm sure a lot of people are thankful for that. That does bring us to the end of today's show. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for our book review with Kathy Rensenbrink. But for now, from me, Ben Rylan, thanks for listening and goodbye.